My first guest this morning, as I mentioned, is David Rosenblum. He is an attorney in Utah. As of Sunday, Utah has the strictest drinking driving law in the country. The National Transportation Safety Board has recommended states drop the BAC to 0.05 for many years. All the other states in the U.S. are still at 0.08 BAC. That's blood alcohol content. According to the NTSB, over 100 countries around the world have dropped that level to 0.05. And David Rosenblum, attorney at law, says he has spent many years representing clients who have been charged with DUIs, and he has a simple bit of advice. Don't drink anything alcoholic at all if you're going to drive. He'll explain the per se BAC of 0.05 and how the new law can affect your liability with drinking and driving. Welcome, David. Thank you for joining us on this New Year's Eve morning.
Good morning.
Get right up close to your mic, please. Okay. So thanks for coming by. Give us a brief overview of what the 0.05 per se BAC level means to the average consumer of alcohol.
So that means don't drink anything and get near a car. By way of explanation, you need to understand the law first, and there's two parts to the law. The law has been ratcheted down so that there's no intent needed. All you need is actual physical control of a car, which means you could have the keys to the car in the car and be sitting in it. You could be sitting in the passenger seat of any vehicle, which in Utah includes a bicycle, and have a BAC of either 0.5 or greater, 0.05 or greater, or have any amount of alcohol or any drug that results in impairment. And impairment is measured by field sobriety tests. The big thing to understand here, which people don't understand until they're arrested, is that you don't get tested and then arrested. You get arrested and then tested, always, 100% of the time. They don't have the machine with them. The machine is back at the station. So when they smell alcohol or you admit to drinking, they get you out of the car, they perform field sobriety tests. Most people can't do them sober. They've never been tested on a sober control group. And then they're arrested. If they go back to the station, they blow 0.04, let's say, in this case. They don't give them a ticket out and say, hey, go on your way. Here's your car back that we towed. They just give them a DUI that is an impairment DUI. So in other words, you can't have any alcohol and drive safely.
Okay, so how is it that law enforcement does detect impairment? Is it just based on smell? The window opens, they smell alcohol, they see you swerve. What, so you're driving too slowly?
It used to be the case that 90% of DUIs 30 years ago were based on visual impairment of driving. You could see the driving pattern. Someone would see a car swerving. Now, 90% of DUIs come out of regular traffic stops. In other words, speeding. Your lights aren't on. You've got a taillight out. You ran over the yellow line. Some of those might indicate impairment, and some of those I did on the way over this morning. So the problem with that is that people have equated, because of the National Highway Transportation Administration has been advertising this for 30 years improperly, that the 0.08, or in this case the 0.05, means impairment. In other words, people think, well, I'm fine to drive. I've had one drink. But they may be over, their breath may be over 0.08.
And it would just depend on maybe what they've eaten, or how long ago they had the drink.
It depends on
how
a number
much
of
sleep
factors,
you've had.
But a great math to use, which is easy to remember, is 0.04 for each drink. You burn off half of that per hour. So after an hour with one drink, you're at 0.02. Now, that's all things being equal, which they never are. So because blood and breath are not the same, and because we use a machine in Utah that was designed for two breath tests, but we only use one, you can get inaccuracies of up to 200% greater or 50% less. In other words, if I'm a 0.05, I might blow a 0.10 or I might blow a 0.025. And there's no way of knowing unless you have yourself bought a portable breath tester. which you can buy at Best Buy for $100.
And the breath testing can be done on site at the traffic stop.
Well, the portable breath testing can be done on site, but most officers shy away from that because the portable breath tester isn't certified or calibrated. It's not like the machine that costs $8,000 back at the station, which, by the way, they do make a portable model, which some UHP officers carry. And so it is possible to do it at the site, but they're not going to unarrest you. In other words, you're getting tested after you failed the field sobriety tests. If you can pass them and you're a gymnast, then great. They're letting you go.
So talk about that a little bit, field sobriety.
The field tests consist of an eye test. It's called a horizontal gaze nystagmus, which can be fairly indicative if tested correctly under the proper conditions. And what they're looking for there is an involuntary jerking of the eyes when you follow a track an object, like a finger or a pen. Unfortunately, different people exhibit that at different alcohol levels, and some people have it naturally. At the end of the day, you're wearing glasses, I see. You're going to have fatigue nystagmus, and your eyes aren't going to track as well. And, of course, age comes into it. The second test is called the 9-step walk and turn, which no one can pass sober. I say that readily. And there's 8 clues to that one, and 2 clues, for instance, missing a heel-to-toe step by more than half an inch or stepping off an imaginary line is a failure, quote-unquote, of that test. So that's indicative of impairment.
So you just have to fail 2 elements of that
You have 18
test.
Steps, and in any one of them you can create a mistake, and if you have 2 mistakes, you're done. The last one is a one-legged stand where you hold your leg up 6 inches. You can't hop. Put your foot down or sway. And, you know, that's subjective. And so most people under conditions like today, you know, where it's snowing, you're outside on the highway and cars are passing, can't pass these sober. They're not fantastic. So some officers, maybe 50% of them, will use a portable breath tester to decide. And if you've indeed had one drink and you've got the right officer, they may well let you go if you're 0.04 or 0.03. Or after being charged, the DA may decide it's not worth going. But you've still been arrested, paid $1,000 to the DMV, gotten your car towed. It's not a good night. This is the most rational decision you can make in Park City, is to take Uber for $10 back to home and take it there or leave your car.
So people who use alcohol to the extent that they're so inebriated that they can't see correctly, they can't really converse, they can't function. So is it any different from someone who is distracted by texting or looking at their cell phone?
No, and that's a great
point. Behind the wheel?
This is the first time in the last, I suppose, 30 years that we've had something to compare it to. We've had about 16, to round it down, 15,000 deaths from alcohol for the past 35 years. Consistently, despite the fact that, you know, our numbers of drivers have gone up. We've had now the number of texting deaths approach that, and we don't really know what texting deaths are because not every cop is able to check the phone or see. So we're thinking those are underreported. But that's a fairly good comparison that they're making. The only, you know, the way to solve this problem is to put an interlock in every car. Every car now that you buy new has backup cameras. Some have 7-inch screens, LCD screens. And we could solve this problem by making the car inoperable for less than $100 a car. But I doubt you'll see the political will to do that.
So that disability, that what is it called?
Interlock.
Interlock. So that, from a technology standpoint,
it's there.
We're there. There's nothing that could prevent that from happening.
No.
And if there was the will, I mean, just like seatbelts were put into cars, 35, 40 years ago? When they weren't necessarily required. Yeah. What about that distracted driving, though, texting? Is there the technology to disable phones when you're in well, the car.
Yeah, they have that technology now, and some, I think Sprint now offers it. And that's where we'll be headed. But the problem from my standpoint, doing this for about 20 years, is this. It's real hard to change human behavior, but it's real easy to change technology. If you disable a car and you have to blow into it to get it started, or you have a sensor on the sun visor that senses alcohol, which is real easy to do, that's the easiest way to solve this problem. We give out 1.6 million DUIs a year as a country. That's a lot of DUIs. And the NHTSA has estimated for years that for every one we get, there's 500 more out there. And I would believe that.
What's NHTSA?
National Highway Transportation Safety Administration. They're the people that in Washington that publish all of the factoids on everything regarding roadways.
We talked a little bit before this interview about the stigma that accompanies drinking and driving. Can you talk a little bit about your perspective on that, please?
Yeah, it has, I think, a sort of a taint to it that is very hard to get away from. If you pick up one young, it can not only affect, you know, your student loans, federally insured student loans, cost you $10,000 to $20,000 over the next 5 years for insurance, but it can affect your ability to get a job. It can affect your ability to become a nurse or any kind of practitioner. It can affect your ability to get a legal license to practice. Any licensing through the state, especially in Utah, will look at that. And in other words, even if it is a 0.04 DUI, or you took your medication for the first day and were groggy and got in a little accident, it's not like they look at the facts behind the DUI. In other words, the DUI just stays with you, and it stays with you forever. If you got one 20 years ago and you get another one today, the DA isn't going to give you any kind of deal. And a lot of these penalties, are mandatory minimums. So people think, well, you know, I'm a good guy. I've never been in trouble before. The penalties, they're mandatory. The judge can't do anything but apply them.
So there's a complication with DUIs around prescription medicine. And you and I even talked about, say, your son drinking a kombucha before getting in the car and having a traffic stop and a potential DUI under those circumstances. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Two different things to unpack there, having had three teenagers and now a 22 and a 20-year-old. If you're under 21 or under, you have to be 0.000 when driving or in actual physical control of the car. So if you're sitting in the car drinking a kombucha and the keys are in there and you're listening to the radio and your buddy's inside who's the driving, if you're sitting in the passenger seat, that's your car while your buddy's gone. And if you have a kombucha in you, that has a little bit of alcohol in it, enough to blow 0.002, a tiny bit. But that's enough to get an alcohol-restricted driver ticket. That will suspend your license for a year. It'll get you an interlock. In other words, it's not a drop DUI is how it's referred to. The other part of this is about 30% of DUIs today are from prescription drugs, at least in my practice. And people think that because it is prescribed, they are allowed to take it legally. Well, that's true that it is a defense to what's called the metabolite DUI. So the third type of DUI is a metabolite DUI. If you go and you smoke pot in Colorado legally and drive back into Utah the next day or even a week later, you still have it in your system. And even if you're not impaired, that's a DUI. So if you say, well, I smoked it, but I smoked it legally, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you have a prescription guard for it. It's illegal. Same thing here. If you have a prescription drug that you've taken, your husband's prescription drug, and you've taken it just to go to sleep the night before, and you get stopped, you say, well, I did take a pill last night. That's a metabolite DUI. You're not allowed to have it in your system. It's as much as a per se DUI. It is a DUI. Now, for people who then take, let's say, a drug legally, but can't pass these field sobriety tests for any reason, even a physical reason, then you're impaired by definition of the officer. And you have the any drug part, and there is your DUI. So a lot of the DUIs I deal with are day after Ambien cases is the most common one. Or you're taking a pain pill, or even an SSRI, even an antidepressant. When you take it the first time, you look a little groggy, or you may be sleepy because you got no sleep the night before. And if you can't pass those field sobriety tests, and you've admitted to taking something, anything, legally, illegal, that's a DUI.
Interesting. So do you expect to see an increase in DUI cases here in Utah now that the back level, the BAC level is dropped?
I think there'll be an uptick, but since DUIs are enforced, mainly come out of traffic stops, they're more a function of enforcement than they are of testing. In other words, people picture, I think, in their minds, people having a drink and getting stopped and the cop letting them go, which never happens. And so they think, well, if I have one drink, I'll be okay. Or now I've got to decrease from two drinks to one drink. There's no safe limit out there because of the any amount of alcohol portion of the bifurcated law. You can get it for a 0.05, which means we don't care if you're fine to drive, or you can get it by not passing those field sobriety tests. So it's a real conundrum. I would expect to see maybe a 10 to 15% uptick, maybe. You know, and I think that's going to come out of the idea that they want to drive this point home that people shouldn't drink and drive. What worries me more than anything is the governor coming out and saying that a grown man can have three drinks and be under 0.05. That is mathematically out. He had to be drinking when he said that because it's impossible. There is no man, unless a 275-pound man who drinks every day, who can have three drinks. I mean, because you're not putting one of the factors in there, which is time. In an hour, he's over 0.05. In 2 hours or 3 hours, you might be under 0.05. But that's not really the point. They shouldn't be encouraging the idea that you can somehow, you know, use a chart to figure out your BAC. If you want to go out and buy a PBT and chance the fact that you're going to pass the field sobriety tests, I wouldn't recommend it, but at least that's a start in the general direction. But do not use a chart to calculate your BAC. That's insane. Or listen to the governor's recommendation that three drinks equals under 0.05. It doesn't.
Sure. Too many variables on that. Do you expect the rest of the country to follow suit? Will this be a domino effect?
My perspective on this is I'd like to see it go to 000, because most of the people getting caught for DUIs are not people who have high BACs, unfortunately. About half of them are little piddly DUIs that come out of these regular traffic stops where the person was driving fine, but they happen to be over 0.08. And they're like, how could that be? Well, it's because your breath doesn't equal your blood. Your breath could be anything. You can burp and be over 0.05. But I would say that the easiest way to go here is to just go to 000. And I expect that if we can't do that, it'll be because of the restaurant and beverage lobby. But I would see us going to at least 0.04, something like that. That's it matches worldwide, where it's a very tiny amount. And at that point, it just doesn't make sense to drink. Mm-hmm. You know, people can't equate a number with impairment, because 0.08 and 0.05, you don't even know that you've had a drink at that level. It's so low for people who drink regularly.
Well, thank you very much, David Rosenblum, attorney specializing in DUI and also having a pretty vast understanding of the new BAC laws that have taken effect as of yesterday. Thanks for coming by,
David. Thanks for having me.